From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on February 8th in downtown Rochester when Governor Andrew Cuomo announced $50 million in state funding would be designated to revitalizing Rochester's Riverway. The Rock the Riverway project will bring together 28 projects along the Genesee with a goal of reestablishing the river as the centerpiece of downtown Rochester. And think about maybe Buffalo's canal side with year-round activities and restaurants as one model or an idea of what we could have here. The city of Rochester already has its own ideas, and it's opening up the process to the community as well. So what will it take to revitalize Rochester's Riverway? What are the types of projects already under consideration? What would you like to see? How will it all come together in terms of planning, funding, and development? Those questions and more this hour with our guests in studio, the recovering Bob Duffy, co-chair of the Rock the Riverway Advisory Panel. How are you?
Recovering.
Recovering? Hanging in there. So if Bob sounds a little weak voice, it's just...
Living proof that flu shots are not 100% accurate in terms of preventing a flu.
Bob is not saying don't get your flu shot. He's saying it doesn't always work. Good to have you back here, Bob. Thank you. Ann Crest is also co-chair of the Rock the Riverway Advisory Panel. Welcome back, Ann.
Thank you.
With us in studio as well, Alex Udelson, who's chief of staff for the City of Rochester. Alex, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
And Clement Chung is a member of the Rock the Riverway Advisory Panel, of which there are 12 members. He's also past chair of the Advisory Committee for the Rock City Coalition. Clement, welcome to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
Alex, I guess I want to start with you from the city's perspective because, you know, in some regards, $50 million, it's not all, I don't think it's all in one shot at one moment, but that's a lot of seed funding to get something going. And why don't you walk us through how this came together and so the broad outlines before we get some specifics.
Sure. So, you know, as you said, $50 million is an incredible initial commitment from the governor, and we could not be more thankful for his support. This really came to fruition when the Rose Fellowship with the National League of Cities and the Urban Land Institute came to Rochester and made a few suggestions on how to really revitalize our city. And the number one recommendation that they had was you have to reengage with your waterfront. When you look at Cleveland and Pittsburgh and our neighbors to the west in Buffalo, and you've taken a look at what they've been able to do with their river, it's just incredible to see the transformation and the private investment that's been able to grow out of that public investment. And so we started to put together a list of proposals. A lot of them are proposals that were already out there. So, you know, the Convention Center and the Blue Cross Arena have long needed upgrades. Charles Carroll Park has long needed upgrades. The Pontarren Bridge by the Genesee Brewery is in need of repair. But we also tried to really imagine, in a perfect world, what are all of the things we would do to revitalize our river and revitalize our city. And so there's a litany of projects that are all available on cityofrochester.gov/rocktheriverway. But a couple sort of key themes that we've tried to develop is one, driving private investment, creating jobs, creating opportunities for the private sector to do what they do best, which is create jobs. The second is connect the Genesee Riverway Trail all the way along both sides of the river, from Vacuum Oil to Running Track Bridge, past High Falls. And then sort of, as I mentioned, there's some you know, needed facilities upgrades that also drive private investment, tourism, and economic growth, like the Convention Center and the Blue Cross Arena. So we kind of put it all together in one proposal and brought it to the governor's office, and I think they saw, you know, the transformation that the governor has been able to, you know, help with in Buffalo, specifically with Canal Side and the inner and outer harbor. And that's really the basis and how this project came to fruition.
So that's a pretty good comparison, you think. For those who've been to Canal Side, been to Buffalo, you stand, I mean, obviously it's not perfectly apples to apples, but you think that's a good basis for a starting point for a vision here.
It's not perfectly apples to apples. I think that the stretch of land that we're talking about in this proposal is much larger. That, you know, the city owns most of the land that we're talking about. So there are some differences, but to the extent that we're talking about public investment driving economic growth and recreating a city, that's exactly what we're looking to do here.
I want to ask all of you, I think, an important question. If this is going to work, we have to understand why previous efforts haven't worked very well. Every time I go out to Pontarren, I stand on that bridge and I go, this is one of my favorite places in the world. Mm-hmm. It's a remarkable view, and there's never anybody there. I mean, there's a few, but it's just amazing to me how sparse it is. And I kind of want to go around the table and ask it. And Clement, I think your background as well can give some insight, understanding what you've seen in other cities and other marketplaces. But even going as far back as when I got to Rochester, when then-Mayor Bill Johnson was trying to revitalize High Falls and create sort of an entertainment district, all well-intended. You know, the marketplace didn't really grab onto that as much as maybe some people had wanted. So there have been ideas over the years. Why do you think, what do you think has held us back? Is it the geographic, I mean, I think Alex makes a good point. The geographic space, we're more spread out than Buffalo. Is that the main issue here, or is it something else?
I don't necessarily think so. And, you know, obviously there's plenty of people around this table who have a lot deeper history and understanding of what's been tried in the past and what's happened in the past. I think there's, you know, specifically looking at, say, the High Falls District, I think there's been an issue with engagement with the surrounding communities. I think that's really one of the things that, you know, as you said, you know, a lot of investment came in, you know, 15, 20 years ago into the High Falls Entertainment District, but it never really took hold. And, you know, what are the reasons behind that? And on the other hand, you look at an area like, you know, the East End, Eastern Alexander, where a lot of that growth and the buzz around that area has really been organic. And it's driven by the residents, you know, the vitality of the people who live in that area. So maybe that's one of the things that's really kind of held us back a little bit, is that connectivity to what does it mean to invest all of this public money to get these great facilities, but then engage and use them in a way that the communities and the surrounding neighborhoods need.
That concerns me, because if it's not happening organically, for example, in High Falls, does that make us think it's not going to happen? Or are there other things that we can do to pave that way to happen?
Well, I think, you know, and, you know, Bob, maybe you can speak a little bit more to this based on your history with this, but I think what we've seen in the last 10 years is a change in, you know, thinking around that. And, you know, now we look at the vacancy rate in terms of commercial space around High Falls. It's a lot more space is taken up now. You know, a lot more tenants are here. I think we're starting to see that vibrancy come back, but I think it wasn't necessarily, you know, a directed push and said, you shall locate your headquarters here, or your office here, or this is where you should live. I think it's because people have wanted to discover that. And, you know, as people discover it on their own, then, you know, word of mouth, you know, that connectivity, that networking that happens on a more social level becomes more important, and actually, I think, builds more traction.
Okay. Bob, why do you think it hasn't really worked in the past?
I think to play off what Clem just said, if you go back to High Falls, I honestly think great things were tried, but Carlos Carbolata, who I worked alongside for my years in City Hall, came one day and said, we can't force this. Let the market decide. So we backed off. As Clem said, the market has decided and taken over, and High Falls has really taken off in many ways in terms of commercial space and some residential, even to a point that my first year in office as mayor, I had a meeting in New York City with the Tribeca Film Festival, who wanted to buy a building in High Falls and have like an upstate rendition of a Tribeca Film Festival. That stopped a year later, but they had been up here twice and loved the area. And I think going back to this whole conversation, I'm going to applaud Mayor Warren and Alex and the team at City Hall for the work they've done so far. Great work in terms of a lot of projects to look at, choose from, and discuss. The governor's $50 million investment is huge. It's seed money. And I think what the governor's looking to do is, like Canal Side, start the process. And having lived through Canal Side in my last life, Canal Side really was wallowing until the governor stepped in with both Terry and Kim Pegula. And government had money invested, but the private sector came in as well. And the hope here is, if we do our job the right way, we really start along the line of things that could be transformational, that we'll see the private sector step in. You know, the government cannot fund it all. Say, Alex said, the city owns property, which is a great opportunity for us. But the public has a chance to weigh in. And I think that's part of this process, really, is to make sure what we do is, going back to Clem said, the market has to decide. We just can't come up with an idea and just make it happen. I think there's got to be a support behind it. And the last thing I want to say, and I'll say it several times today, possibly, Rochester has to get beyond this innate half for it, half against it, this resistance to projects. We have a history of not being able to deliver on projects. No project is perfect. Canal Side was not perfect, but Buffalo got it done. And I was there 2 weeks ago up with Russ Brandon for a lunch, and it is still growing exponentially up there. So I think we as a community have to say, okay, we might not all agree. Let's get a consensus, and let's have the courage to make some decisions and go for it and get something going.
Why do you think, Bob, this community tends to have the fort against it.
I go back to Renaissance Square and go back to the Performing Arts Center.
Weren't there some good reasons to oppose some of these projects?
Well, there's always good reasons, but you know what? In the end, nothing happened for years. So that Renaissance Square block, now it's picking up now, years later. But in the end, you know, sometimes the best thing about politics is finding something in the middle. And you can't, when both sides dig in, sometimes it's for political reasons, sometimes it's other reasons. But when things come to a grinding halt, even those who, and I won't give names, but people who have funded projects for us in the past in government have been pretty much throw their hands up in frustration, like, what's wrong with you in Rochester? Right down to photonics. We have a history of digging in and battling on things. And you know what? I'm an old school person. Get behind closed doors, battle. But at least have a consensus. Have a sense of let's try this. And I think that through public input and debate and dialogue, we can come up with a pretty good step forward. It's not discounting resistance. But I think we have to get beyond where everything just stops and grinds to a halt.
I'm not doing my job if I don't follow up one more time and say, aren't you the guy who said, okay, we can pull the plug on the fast ferry?
Oh, yeah, I am. I did. You know something? I'm the one that did it. And we looked at every opportunity. We're losing, I can tell you, the dollars per month. Looked at every opportunity, sought some private sector investment for that.
So they're not, they don't all work then. So no, some opposition makes sense.
They don't all work. But you know what? Bottom line is the fast ferry did start. And I always gave Bill Johnson great credit for getting it off the ground and trying something. And you know what? We can't be afraid to try and experiment. Get it off. And you know, the governor gets criticized around the state for some projects don't work. Some businesses don't stay in business. It happens everywhere. But if we end up having this paralysis all the time, we're not going to go anywhere. And I think Buffalo is showing us they've gotten through, they've gone past it. And I had an executive in Buffalo say that Rochester is like Buffalo was 7 to 10 years ago, and Buffalo is moving ahead. So I think it's a great opportunity for us in this project. Let's get a winner going, whatever it may be. And I think the city has done a great job putting a menu out for a discussion.
All right, Ann, what do you think hasn't worked in the past and what can be different?
Well, so many things to say. The first thing I want to start with is I drove here from MCC's Brighton campus, and right across the street is our downtown campus. And when you look at projects that had their fits and starts, certainly our downtown campus is one of them. We have the great good fortune of being located near High Falls, and I can tell you that the way that our college views the value of that riverfront is invaluable. And I think the way we want to move forward, you know, without looking at things that haven't happened in the past, is to begin with a fundamental truth, which is that it would be difficult to find a person in this community who doesn't believe that our riverfront is an underutilized asset, and that it is perhaps the greatest asset that this city has. I grew up as a little girl in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and Milwaukee is very much like Rochester in that it has a river and it has a lakefront. And this summer, hundreds of thousands of people will come to Milwaukee from all over the world to go to Summerfest, which has been running since the 70s along Milwaukee's lakefront. It has been a significant economic development project. The city also turned toward the river and built its own version of a river walk. You look at communities that have long utilized their river and see still that it is an underutilized asset. You look at what's happened in Chicago, where they have long turned themselves toward the river, but maybe 5 years ago realized they didn't have a way for people to actually walk along the river and have built an entire river walk that has, to Clem's point, spurred incredible private investment in the city. I think to Bob's point, we really need to come around this because this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity being provided because of the vision that Mayor Warren has provided, because of the input she has gathered, and because of the dollars that Governor Cuomo has allotted us.
I want to talk community input, and then we're going to get into some of the specific ideas because there are some ideas that are out there that have sparked a lot of interest already. Alex Udelson, what is coming up here on this coming Tuesday, March 8th?
And I believe it's Thursday, March 8th.
Thursday.
Correct. Thursday, March 8th.
I've got Tuesday. March 8th is a Thursday.
Yes. So Thursday.
Thank you, Alex.
No worries.
You can come Tuesday if you want.
You can come
Tuesday.
No
one will be there.
Yeah.
Thursday the 8th.
Well, and as Dr. Kress mentioned, one of the great things about that's happened in our city recently is the MCC downtown campus, which we can see right out of our window here. And so Thursday from 4 to 6 at the MCC downtown campus, the advisory board will be holding their first public input session. And so we would invite any member of the community that would like to give their thoughts to come and participate in this. And I'll let Bob and Ann speak a little bit more about it. But one thing that I also want to mention is that if you can't make it to, and this is just the first of what will be multiple mm-hmm. public input sessions, but if you can't make it to any of them, we have on our website, cityofrochester.gov/rocktheriverway, we have an online public input comment section where you can share your thoughts, and then also you can tweet your thoughts at Rock the River, which is a Twitter account we set up. And so we're trying to find as many ways for the public to give their input into this plan.
Okay, go ahead, Bob.
Well, as Alex said, we want to encourage people to come. Even the advisory committee can weigh in with their suggestions. There's no such thing as a bad idea, a bad suggestion, but I think there's a great degree of interest. We had so many people want to be on the advisory committee. We want to keep it manageable, but you could sense there's a great degree of energy and passion behind this, and we want to listen to people, so it's going to really be not a presentation section, but a listening opportunity for us.
All right, so let me read a couple of comments that have come in on that score. Carolyn writes to us on Twitter and says, regarding why is there such a for-against debate on every project in Rochester? Because there's not enough community input on the front end. That's from Carolyn. Martha in Rochester writes to the program and says, I'm a longtime Rochester resident who has lived near the river for decades. I support the state's investment in the Rock the Riverway initiative, but I have concerns about the public input process. The city does not have a good track record for incorporating or acknowledging input from community members regarding waterfront development. I'm reminded of the Edgewater issue in Shalott from a few years ago. The residents made it clear they didn't want high rises at the Port of Rochester, but the Moran administration moved forward with the project until Edgewater didn't meet its financial commitment deadline. Similar to that, it seems like the city already has ideas for what it wants to do with Rock the Riverway. How can we be sure the city will listen to new or different ideas from the community? I think there's a trust issue there. That's from Martha. Alex, what do you think?
Yeah, so I mean, I don't necessarily want to get into a back and forth about previous projects, but I think what we've very clearly did here is we're being as transparent and open about this process as possible. Obviously, to get the conversation started, we needed to put together what is really a menu of projects that add up to $500 million. And so we see it as the advisory board and the public's job to sort of whittle that down for the first $50 million commitment and to come up with a community plan. I'll also say what we did in this plan is we incorporated other community plans that have already been out there, like Greentopia. So the Over the Falls Bridge is something that is in this plan really because of the work of Greentopia. And so, you know, I think we're you know, point well taken. We're really trying. I think this public input process is going to be completely transparent. The entire plan is on our website, and people can propose projects outside of the scope
of
this plan.
But the plan could change.
Oh, the plan mm-hmm. will. The plan certainly yeah. will change. And just to be very clear about what this document is, this is a conceptual plan. It is a conceptual representation of our local waterfront revitalization program. And so none of these renderings are final designs or have gone through the final public input process or our full engineering renderings. These are just to get the conversation started, and it's going to be the public's job to sort of guide us in what we want to do. And then also, once individual projects are approved, those individual projects would then go through an additional public input process. So there are multiple steps along the way here to try to engage the community as best as we can.
And if I could just jump in, because I think Alex, I really want to underscore a point that he just made, which is that this is not the plan that the governor has asked us to come up with over the next 3 months. These are projects that the city has with lots of input before. The city sees these as fundamental to the growth of the Riverway. But the whole point of all of this public engagement is that these are not the only projects we know that are out there or the only vision that we know is out there. And so I would encourage anyone who has concerns about public input to really become involved. Come to the sessions that will be announced. Supply your input online. You know, make sure that the advisory committee, which is a very diverse committee and with diverse perspectives on what should happen with the Riverway as well, make sure that folks know what you're thinking.
And what is the timeline, by the way? You mentioned a few months from now. What's going to happen in May?
So the governor has asked that we submit an initial plan to his office, and that's really what we've been tasked with. We know what our budget is. We also know that part of this may require, as you've heard at the table already, additional private investment. But what we should have done within that three-month period is a plan for this initial $50 million.
Okay, Bob?
Just to echo what Alex said before, it's a conceptual plan, so people should not renew it. The city has their mind made up. I think the city is doing a great job of laying out, here are some potential projects we have thought through. It's hard to start from scratch, just coming in and not thinking of anything. As Anda said, the governor wants one thing. The governor has no idea what we're going to propose. He just would like our plan in May to come back to him. And so really, I think the public should feel pretty strongly that this is a great opportunity to weigh in. And one project that we haven't raised, but I would say it was somewhat transformational, and I credit my predecessor, Bill Johnson, for that, was Cornhill Landing. Mm-hmm. If you go back, that was one of the first big projects downtown the river that I could think of in some time. And I think to this day that is still an impactful project and a great public-private partnership.
All right, so listeners, if you want to call the program as we talk Rock the Riverway and weigh in with questions, comments, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. I want to turn back to Clement Chung, who is a member of the Rock the Riverway advisory panel, with an off-air comment from a listener named John, who says, "We have spent millions of dollars on high falls, stadiums, ferries, etc., but we haven't spent any money tying them together. We need to tie the river to all of these things and make them accessible to people." Agree or disagree there?
I completely agree with that. I think I came into this process very recently, and one of the things that really excites me about this is that this really is the first time I've seen a comprehensive overview of all these types of projects. I've been aware of some of these projects for many years and some of the concepts for many years, but I've never seen a rendering that shows the map of the river from the extent of the projects that are there, and puts it all in place. Like, where does this project fit in with the other projects? Where does this fit in with the community? Where does this fit in with a specific neighborhood? I think that's where this is exciting to me, is to see the comprehensive vision of this.
Okay, Alex, do you agree with that comment from John as well?
No, absolutely. And that was really one of the driving forces behind this proposal was, we've had an ask out there for the convention center. We've had an ask out there for the Blue Cross Arena. We've talked about Pont de Rennes, but to be able to put everything for people into perspective and talk about how they relate to each other, and when all of these get done together, the amount of private investment they'll be able to drive, that was one of the driving forces behind this project. And the task that the advisory board is going to have that's going to be harder than I think we might realize is, because all of these projects are interconnected and relate to each other, this is not like choosing items from a food menu that add up to $50. These are all interrelated projects. Some of them depend on the designs of the others. And so it's going to have to be a really interactive process. And I think I'm excited for this community to really have that process for the first time in a while.
All right, Bob, you want to jump in before we get to some phone calls?
Just for perspective for costs and money, I was saying earlier before we went on the air, tearing down Midtown Plaza was a $65 million project. A big chunk of that was asbestos remediation. So when you look at $50 million, it is a great start. It's a great seed money, but part of this is coming up with ideas, maybe the first one that's transformational, that is going to create a lot of excitement, not only with our community, but also with the private sector, because we need that private sector investment to be part of it.
All right, Richard in Rochester first on the phone. Go ahead, Richard.
Hi, I'm the architect at Mark IV Construction. So you remember the partnership for the design of Cornhill Landing quite correctly. Connectivity has always been our frustration. We have plenty of people want to get on the riverway here, and they want to know how they get through downtown. What do they do when they get to the long staircase by the War Memorial? I don't understand why there isn't something published that shows that the goal is to make this connected so you can go directly from Charlotte to the U of R. I just don't know what you're recommending downtown. And I'd really like to see that. And that should be a prerequisite for anything that gets approved for the $50 million on the river.
All right, Richard, thank you for the phone call. So, Alex, you want to start there? He's asking, let's get specific. What is being recommended downtown, or at least, you know, in terms of the early proposals? Go ahead.
So a couple things, Richard. One is that, you know, one way to view Rock the Riverway is Rock the Riverway is focusing on the core of the river, so from the South River to High Falls. You can sort of think of it under the umbrella of our local waterfront revitalization program, which is, you know, also online on the city website. Which includes Charlotte, includes the entire river landscape. Sort of like I said before, one of the main goals of this plan is to connect the Genesee Riverway Trail along both sides of the river all the way from Running Track Bridge to Vacuum Oil. And that's precisely what we're doing. And I've noticed that having moved back here a year ago, I'll try to walk along the river and I'll get to a dead end. And I say, what's mm-hmm. the deal here? And so that is absolutely a central, if not the central, goal of this plan is to provide that access and that connectivity. So point is definitely well taken. I think it's something that we will make sure that the advisory board knows is a priority. And like I said before, some of the plans for trails depend on the construction of the aqueduct or depend on the construction of the Mill Street crossing area. And so we have to have a community discussion about what we want to see downtown. I think what we have proposed from the city is pretty clear, but we're going to have to work together to make sure this is a plan that people can get behind.
I'm just looking at specifics, and we could probably spend the rest of the hour or several hours on some of the proposals. Again, what you're hearing, listeners, is Alex Udelson, the chief of staff at the city of Rochester, and our guest saying this is not a done deal, that public input is going to be welcomed, considered heavily here. But they had to at least kind of draw up some ideas, some existing in the community already, I think, and kind of trying to put an umbrella over this and saying, how are we going to tie the river together? So I'm looking at, for example, Alex, the aqueduct reimagined in the Library North Terrace project there. I mean, it looks, so give me a sense for, I mean, it looks great, but mm-hmm. give me a sense for where this kind of comes from.
Yeah, so this you know, and Bob can probably talk about it even more. The aqueduct has been debated probably since before I was born. we you know, are going to need, you know, public input to really decide what we want to do with it because it's such a central piece of the proposal. What we sort of did is, when you look at connecting the trail along both sides of the river, the easiest and most efficient and best design would be to do at least a partial rewatering of the aqueduct, which would involve taking the deck off of Broad Street, lowering the elevation near the Convention Center and the Rundell Terrace, and making that a great public space. So whether that would be fully rewatered with you know, fountains and all of that, I don't know whether it would be grass and a great programmable area potentially for the 4th of July fireworks or other activities. I don't know. But so these are our conceptual recommendations, and I'm sure there will be a lot of opinions about the aqueduct specifically. But this is something, sort of to Bob's point, this has been something that's been talked about in this community for a very long time. And I think through this process, we need to come up with, if not a consensus, a decision, and to really get something like this done.
The rewiring the canal proposal, going back many years ago, I think it was my first year in office, I get criticized for being my idea. No, it's not. I give Tom Hack, a city engineer, great credit, and I think it's a great idea. The thing is, if you go back in history, in 2008, the recession hit, and money pretty much stopped. So there is really no hope. We just kind of stopped. Genesee Community Charter School put together a proposal for rewatering the canal. And Tom Hack's concept and work was done was great. City still has that in its repositories. But some rendition of that, whatever it may be, it's exciting. And oh, there are people for it, people against it. But in many ways, it is kind of a comparison to what we talked about with the canal site. It's water downtown. It's bring people down. And the canal was the lifeblood of the city. As a kid who played in subway beds and when he was a kid, it was part of the canal path. And the canal would come down Broad Street and kind of almost follow along West Main if you go the old record or the old pathway of the canal. But the whole aqueduct area, it's a fabulous area. And I think the city has done some great work in some renditions of that. And if the public would weigh in and come up with what would they want to see down there, because it is not a waste of money. And if you look at Canal Side, the crowds they draw, I think we do the same thing. You have the arena, you have the hotels, convention center. You have critical mass down there.
But Bob, and Bob in Rochester, Andrew in Irondequoit, we're coming to you next on the phones. But off-air, David in Brighton called to say that comparing Buffalo to Rochester, he thinks is more apples to oranges because Buffalo is blessed with real estate. He says High Falls is an asset and a detriment. You can't go up and down the river in Rochester like you can in Buffalo. We don't have the real estate to do what they were doing in Buffalo here. High Falls is impeding that connectivity.
Well, we, as Alex mentioned before, we have more real estate than what Buffalo has with Canal Side. It is different. And I think going back to Rich's point, trying to connect, there's been work over the years trying to connect the path. As a former avid runner being on that path, I've been up and down different renditions of it. And you hit dead ends. But again, you know, there's a lot of issues that we could probably talk about, but just, you know, what is the best next step going forward? I mean, that's the perfect thing is the city has done an extraordinary job putting together a list of suggested projects. What we need is true community input. I think Anna and I would agree. Mm-hmm. We want to listen. And I think it may go longer than 2 hours. I think we're going to have a lot of people coming, but we welcome that. And I think it's not going to be a presentation. And I think Alex put something out, even for the advisory board members, if you want a more in-depth presentation because the advisory board members are just coming together now. Mm-hmm. And so I think the sharing of information and trying to make sure everybody has as much as they can before it starts is a good thing. But I want to reiterate, this is by far no done deal, mm-hmm. no final decisions made by any stretch. And I think the public has a great opportunity.
Lots of ways to interact with the city of Rochester and this particular project. So on Twitter, at Rock the River. Online, cityofrochester.gov/rocktheriverway. You can follow the initiative projects, the initiative's progress there and offer feedback. And, of course, 1 week from today, that's Thursday, March 8th, 4 to 6 p.m. at the MCC downtown campus on State Street for a public forum on this, a chance to engage and share your thoughts. I see the phone continuing to ring. We've got lots of phone calls to get through, so I'm late for a break. We're going to come back in a minute, and we're going to come right back to your phone calls as we talk to you. Just heard Bob Duffy, co-chair of the Rock the Riverway Advisory Panel, Ann Kress, co-chair here as well. Clement Chung is a member of the Rock the Riverway Advisory Panel, and Clem is the past chair of the Advisory Committee for the Rock City Coalition, and Alex Udelson is chief of staff for the city of Rochester. Let's go ahead and get that only break and come right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about solitary confinement. How often is it still used in New York State and the United States? Should it be used at all? There's a movement designed to reduce or eliminate solitary confinement use in prisons. But prison guards and unions say they need it to make sure they deter criminals from attacking them. Well, we'll discuss it next hour on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Before I get back to your phone calls, here's my little challenge to you. If you've never been on the Pontarenne Bridge, I challenge anybody to go. You're going to stand there and you're going to probably say to yourself, wait a second, this is Rochester? I've heard that so many times. It's not just because I'm a homer and I work down in the High Falls area. It is a truly special place. And the question becomes, with kind of the, I don't want to say sprawling geography, but there's a lot of real estate, how can it all be tied together and revitalized in a way that is sort of self-sustaining and effective going forward? That's part of the challenge for Rock the Riverway, the state coming in with $50 million. 3 months from now, they want to plan together, or at least the first stages of that, and this is your chance to continue to weigh in. So let me continue to stay with your phone calls. Bob in Rochester. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the non-use of the area between High Falls and Middle Falls. Now, as far as walkways go, we'll never be able to make a connection between the upper river and below High Falls just because of geographical considerations and the railroad being in the way. But since BB Station is closed, there's a very reasonable driveway down to the river, and it wouldn't be too difficult to create a picnic and canoe launch type area where we can use the river between High Falls and Middle Falls. There's only a little section of Class 1 rapids underneath the Platt Street Bridge, which could easily be carried around. And this is an area river that hasn't, most of the public doesn't even know about and probably hasn't been used in 100 years or more.
Okay. Bob, thank you. Some thoughts from the panel on that?
Yeah, I would just I'll let Bob jump in here, but I would point you to in the proposal, pages 44 through 47 are specifically about this area. A lot of it is owned by RG&E, and they're in the process of remediating this land. And so we do have it proposed in this proposal as a great place for recreational activity, potentially some private development, shops. You're right, there is a road there, but given the state of the land right now, you would not want to have your picnic down there right at the second. So I'll let Bob jump in, but that is absolutely part of the proposal.
I think Bob's point is great. Great discussion on that area down there. I want to give kudos to Genesee Brewery. Mm-hmm. Their leadership team has been terrific in terms of getting involved. The Nature Conservancy has also been great on this. There's been discussions even about creating a state park down there. And I know the state is open to that as well. The city has been terrific. It's a lot of work to do. But I think Bob's point is that the untapped potential down there is tremendous. And that's the kind of stuff we're talking about with this whole process is ideas like that.
Go ahead, Ann.
I would just jump in and say, you know, to your point about challenging people to stand on the Pont de Rennes Bridge, and you will see that property that he's describing from the bridge. And anyone who hasn't had that chance, when they come to the open engagement session at our downtown campus, walk across the street, walk across the bridge, see the potential we're talking about. It is incredible.
Listeners, we are flooded with phone calls now. I promise you, in about 3 weeks or so, we're going to come back and have our first follow-up on Rock the Riverway, but we're going to try to get through as many calls as we can for the rest of this hour. Andrew in Irondequoit next. Go ahead, Andrew.
Good morning, or whatever it is.
It's afternoon.
You guys are missing the boat completely, as usual. It's a beautiful spot for what Nathaniel Rochester saw, a water-powered industrial park. And you guys want to have a nature conservancy? Come on. Bob, you and I have talked about this before, Bob Duffy. I've been calling this because you guys have this same program on every couple of years. You say, well, what are we going to do with all this space down here? Bring back the water-powered manufacturing and put the goods that you make on the canal and ship it all over the place on the canal, just like they did 150 years ago. That's my comment.
Okay. It's an idea.
It's not a very good one.
Uh-huh. But, you know, the bottom line is, like I mentioned at the park down there, these are just being floated out as potential suggestions. So I think they're all
Bob,
on
you
table.
Can be honest with Andrew. That's not a very good idea. Andrew, I appreciate the phone call.
Come to the public input session.
Yeah, exactly. Submit it online.
Somebody's got to be honest there. Andrew, here's why I like the idea of manufacturing. I love the idea of water-powered manufacturing. Using the canal to ship, the canal itself, the people who run the canal, they'd like to see a little bit more of it, but they understand that those days are largely past. That it's not impossible to use the canal, but that's not the idea that's probably going to power the Rock the Riverway. Now, in manufacturing, I've had no idea. I mean, is there room, Bob, for water-powered manufacturing? I have no idea.
I would defer to engineers to make that decision.
I'm looking at Clem across the table.
No.
So, Andrew, where it is an interesting idea is we'll see if we can find out more for our next program. I don't know about using the canal to ship, but I appreciate that, and thank you for the phone call. Melissa in High Falls is next. Go ahead, Melissa.
Yes, hi. Before you had a talk about bringing in industrial arts and children who work with their hands back into the school district. And so my idea would be to utilize children to help in this venture of those who don't, you know, want to be computer scientists, to work with their hands and bring that back into our school district in our city schools, because we have a problem with that as well. So that's just an idea and a thought.
Okay, thanks very much. I appreciate that. Thoughts from the panel on that?
The one example I might give around that is it's interesting and it involves another collaboration with the city where we did engage high school students from the Pathways in Technology Early College High School when we had the IBM Smarter Cities grant through the city. And actually high school students came in and talked about data analysis and data mapping. So I think longer term with a plan like this, it would be ideal to bring in students to talk about what does it mean to plan a project on a large scale? What does it mean to have discussions about engineering in these projects? That some ideas sound good, but when you talk practical matters, it's not really possible. I think there's a real opportunity for education in this.
Yeah, I just want to mention There's a national competition called the Future Cities Competition. I know the Rochester City School District recently got involved in that. And I actually went to a presentation that these, I think they're middle schoolers, maybe fifth, sixth graders, you know, they were challenged to look at certain areas of the city, and some of them picked, you know, the downtown area, the Riverway, and came up with their ideas. So they had to go through that process of understanding, you know, what are the issues? You know, why do people not frequent these locations? And what kind of solutions, you know, can you put in there? You know, what's feasible, what's not feasible? I think it's a great suggestion to get our youth involved, because I think they are one of the underutilized resources that we talk about, that we don't really, you know, I don't say we don't value opinions, but sometimes it doesn't even dawn on us to even ask for their opinions.
I fully agree. 2006, the Genesee Community Charter School came to my office, put together a plan for rewiring the canal. Those sixth graders back then, I think, are all college graduates back here in Rochester right now. They got a national award for that, but they were so thoughtful in terms of their proposal. I think the young people in all our schools are an untapped potential, so what a great way to engage them in this process.
All right, let me get back to your phone calls. And this next call is, who do we have next? Tom in Rochester next. Go ahead, Tom.
Okay, I used to do some salmon fishing. I don't know if they're still doing it.
Salmon.
Okay, and the other thing is, when the water is going to rise, there's an alarm, but you can't usually hear too well. You have a few minutes. I don't know where the dam is or whatever they're doing that they're releasing the water, but better have a better alarm if you're going to have a lot of people down there. And also, I've seen canoes go right up near the falls. Now, the one other thing is they put a fence on the bridge, the walk bridge. They put a fence up high enough to keep a lot of kids from throwing big rocks over. But if you're going to have a lot of people down there, you better have a fence that goes over the whole bridge.
All right, Tom, thank you very much. I've been on the Ponce Run many times. I haven't noticed anybody chucking anything off there. But look, safety, it's important. I'm sure they will make sure if we get more activity, more people on the water and around the water, safety will be even more of a priority. I mean, what we need to do is get more people there. And part of the conversation is about how to revitalize this riverfront area. So Rock the Riverway is the project. And Joel writes to us and says, what are the plans for the Plex Brownfield site? Will the money target improvements and cleanup there? Any thoughts there?
So you know, I would just say there is already some work ongoing there. And so sort of separate from Rock the Riverway, there's also, you know, some work and some city money that is being devoted to remediating that land and potentially, you know, making it available for you know, private development and working with the neighbors over there. So there's additional money in the Rock the Riverway plan for the advisory board to consider to further you know, shore up the river wall that is in that area. So again, all things for the advisory board to consider and prioritize for us.
On Twitter, Rock Citizen says, how does equity factor into this process? Will the riverfront just be a playground for the affluent?
No.
I think that's I think Clem started off the discussion by talking about organic growth and really engaging the individuals who live near the Riverway to make sure that their ideas are present there, because what we want is for people to use it, everyone in the community. That's the reason we have the open engagement sessions. It's the reason we're taking ideas from everywhere. But I think it's also, when we talk about citizens using the Riverway, we need to recognize that right now there are lots of impediments to people using the river in Rochester, and part of this is to remove those barriers.
Okay. Tim, writing from Pittsford, says, I like trying new things, but it's easy for Bob Duffy to try things when it's our money, not coming all out of his own pocket. So, Bob, you want to respond? Bob, he's referring to what Bob said earlier. He feels like there's a sometimes, I don't think you use the word defeatist, but sometimes we seem to self-sabotage projects before they really get going. Is that a fair way of describing your feelings?
I think it's a fair way to describe the DNA here in this community. It really is. And so, you know, I think anytime any major project is undertaken, the city undertakes it. It has to be approved by city council, who represents every area of the city. And you know, some projects work, some projects don't work. But the bottom line is, you know, in our role, I mean, Ann and I, we are co-chairing the advisory committee. We have no authority over money. All we can do is make recommendations based on this. But decisions that the mayor is very deeply involved with City Hall, the governor, And I feel if the right input comes from people, that the projects that go forward will be very good ones. So hopefully people should not complain if they don't get involved and participate with this.
And on another note, he says he's interested if there are developers themselves or people from the business community leading this effort. The advisory panel, I think, has a dozen members, and it's kind of a cross-section, isn't it, Alex?
Yeah, it is. And you have really diverse representation there, not just geographically, but also age, gender, occupation. And so we are going to engage the business and the developer community to, you know, I think we need their input to see what's possible in the engineering and architecture community as well. We don't necessarily have any of them on the board because we want to make sure that any potential land sales or transactions or business dealings don't involve any conflicts of interest with the advisory board. So not necessarily on the advisory board, but they will be involved in the process and you know, able to come to the sessions just like everybody else.
And Tim, of the dozen members of the Rock the Riverway Advisory Board, let me just read the backgrounds and where they come from. Bob's with the Greater Rochester Chamber of Commerce, and Ann, of course, MCC, Greentopia, the Rock City Coalition, RG&E, Dunwoody Visual Consulting, the Nature Conservancy, the City of Rochester, Constellation Brands, Ibero-American Action League, North American Breweries, and Rochester Downtown Development Corporation. So those are sort of the home bases for where the people on the advisory board come from, Tim. And if you want, send me a note and let me know what you think about that, because I know his concern is the business community engaged here. Before the hour is gone, I want to turn back to some of the specific ideas. Again, we can't get through them all, but Alex, during the break we were talking briefly. What was the park that caught my attention?
Charles Carroll.
So tell me a little bit about the vision there, and remind listeners again, if they haven't been there, where that is.
Sure. So I work right behind Charles Carroll Park, and Bob works near there as well. And I actually didn't discover it until about 6 months into my time at City Hall. Charles Carroll Park is located right across the river from the old Radisson, now the Rochester Riverside Hotel. It's an amazing potential asset for the community, and I think it represents a lot of what is in this proposal. So you have the First Federal building where we are trying to continue to attract businesses and grow the economy. So you have private growth. You have the downtown business sector. You have its connectivity with the Sister Cities Bridge over across the river. And ultimately what this project is and you know, why it's so crucial and really one of the mayor's top priorities is that the parking garage under it, Crossroads Garage, is quite literally falling apart and has been for some time. And the park sits right on top of it. And so the slabs on the roof of the garage are actually coming apart, which causes the park to come apart. So there's an urgency and a public safety argument for it. There's a private investment argument for it. And then it's just has the potential to be a great public space that can be programmed for concerts and festivals and yoga classes and just reading a book out in the park, since it's so centrally located to so many businesses, government offices, and hotels. And so that's a great project that, you know, I think from the city's perspective, we would certainly hope might be included in this first $50 million.
And if I could go back to one of the earlier comments around, you know, will this just make it a playground for the rich? It doesn't cost anything to walk into a park and read a book. It doesn't cost anything to walk along the riverway. But if you can't because the park can't be kept open because of safety concerns, or you can't because the actual walkway along the river doesn't connect and it constantly hits these starts and stops, then it is inaccessible. And a lot of what we're talking about is taking this incredible asset right in the middle of our city and making it accessible and usable by everyone.
Here is CJ, who says, I would love to be able to see on-off touring boats in Rochester, set up training for the Rochester City School District students to learn Rochester history, get CDL to be able to drive, tour the sites with a stops option, and then enter the river and tour there. The echo under the Memorial Bridge is amazing. That's from CJ.
So I would actually say I would direct you to the South River portion of the proposal, where we actually envision water landings and some other opportunities to get people and boats directly into the water. We've actually been working closely with Cornhill Navigation. They're currently trying to raise money for a second boat. And in discussions with them, they've suggested just that, which would be a partnership with the city school district to take students into the city on the boat, on the river, and teach them about Rochester's history. So that is absolutely a discussion that's already underway.
Let me get one more listener comment. And again, we're going to have another conversation in a few weeks to continue this because there's a lot to do in the next few months with Rock the Riverway. Monica in Parenton says, I'm going to say you're missing the boat completely in a different way. The model has been for the past 20 plus years to use taxpayer money to seed and then see what the market does. And developers always look at housing and retail as if this would be a city with growing population. What needs to be done is to have private sector develop and taxpayers promote the area. And the target consumer needs to be tourism. There needs to be enough attractions to make it a little multi-day trip, and the city and state needs to help in promoting that. It's from Monica and Parenton. Bob?
Well, I think it's a great point, but a lot of the projects that are being put forth are really about public spaces in areas that draw the public, not just private investment. As Alex said before, developers are not on the committee for a reason. We didn't want a conflict of interest, but private sector investment will be huge. And we look at down the road, what you want to see 15, 20 years down the road, $50 million is going to be a small amount of money in terms of what is needed to get this done. But what we do in the very beginning, how we start, and what really starts off this project is going to be incredibly important. And I think some of the suggestions today that have come across have been great. And we hopefully people will show up at the meeting starting next week, next Thursday.
And if yes. I could just add real quick, you know, the argument here about private investment is certainly something that is a top priority for us, and there's already that investment happening. The city has lost population over the past 20 years, but the downtown is growing, and so that's another focus on the core of the river is to provide amenities for that population.
All right, so 1 week from today, March 8th, next Thursday, 4 to 6 p.m. at the MCC downtown campus on State Street, there is the first of a series of public meetings to engage on this issue. You can also jump on the line at cityofrochester.gov/rocktheriverway, offer feedback there, and they're on Twitter at Rock the River. Thanks to all of you for being here. I know we'll have a lot more to talk about as we go forward with Rock the Riverway. We appreciate all of your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Short break. More connections coming up.